This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Hello, I'm Wendy Katzman. I'm a physical therapist. I'm with the University of California, San Francisco, in the Department of Physical Therapy and Rehabilitation Science. I'd like to talk to you today about healthy bones and what you can do to fight fractures with good physical fitness. I'd like to start the talk by describing our skeletons, which actually begin to develop when we're in utero. And they grow rather rapidly in childhood until the age of about 30. And now the growth of the skeleton is really determined by genetics and our hormones. But there's things that we can do, such as good nutrition and lifestyle, that can increase the bone growth during this early phase of life. After menopause, women have very large losses of bone mineral density. We lose about 20% of our bone mass in the first 5 years after menopause. And in older men, there's more gradual loss. But then as we age, there's this slow, continuous loss of bone mineral density with aging. And that's what you can see on this graph here, where you can see this rapid phase of bone growth in the early years, and then this slow, gradual loss with aging. Well, osteoporosis is a skeletal disorder, and it's defined by compromised bone strength that predisposes an individual to an increased risk of fracture. And one of the problems with osteoporosis is that it's painless and it often goes unnoticed until a fracture occurs or until we lose height. And you can see in this picture, in the top picture, there's nice healthy bone. But in the bottom picture, you can see that the bone has gotten thin and brittle, and in some cases has even, you can see these small microscopic fractures that have occurred. In the United States, there's over 44 million people who are at risk for developing at risk for a fracture, and 10 million of those have osteoporosis. Another 34 million of those have what we call low bone mass or osteopenia. And unfortunately, 4 out of 5 of these are women, so women are at greater risk for fractures. And all ethnic groups are affected. So the risk of fracture at age 50 in the United States, women are at greater risk of fracture. And 1 in 2 women at the age of 50 can expect to develop a fracture in their lifetime. Whereas in men, only 1 in 4 men can expect to have a fracture in their lifetime. And unfortunately, once a fracture occurs, a future fracture is much more likely. So how do you know if you're at risk for a fracture? Well, you can go to the World Health Organization site, the FRACS site, and you can put in information about your bone density and answer questions about risk factors, and you can determine what your 10-year risk of any osteoporotic fracture would be. So what your 10-year risk of developing a hip fracture, a spine fracture, a shoulder fracture, or a wrist fracture. And this is used to determine who should be treated with medications for osteoporosis, but it also gives you a really good idea of what's your risk of fracture and whether you have any risk factors that perhaps you could modify. Well, bone density, low bone mineral density, is a strong risk factor for fracture. So is older age, and as I mentioned, women are at greater risk. Also, your body mass, which is calculated from your height and your weight, and it's a measure of your fatness. And so a low body mass without a lot of fat is a risk factor for fracture. If you're an adult and you've had a prior fracture, that increases your risk. If you have a parent who fractured a hip, that increases your risk. Also, if you've been on steroid medications for 3 or more months, that increases your risk. As does smoking and alcohol. If you drink 3 or more alcoholic drinks a day, increases your risk for fracture. If you have rheumatoid arthritis, it increases your risk, as does secondary osteoporosis, which can develop because of things like type 1 diabetes or uncontrolled hyperparathyroidism. If you have chronic malnutrition or if you have chronic liver disease, that can increase your risk. However, there are other risk factors for fractures, and you'll notice that many of these are risk factors that we actually can control, we can do something about. Poor physical conditioning, we can consider changing that by increasing our physical activity. A tendency to fall, and Dr. Aronson has recently presented a wonderful talk about falling and what we can do to reduce our risk factors for falls. But too much load when lifting can increase your risk of spinal fractures, as does an excessive curvature in the back called hyperkyphosis. So if you have an increase in stooped posture in your upper back, that increases your risk for fractures. And then there are other treatments. For instance, certain chemotherapies can affect your bones and can increase your risk for fracture. Well, why do we fracture? And basically, we fracture when the load applied exceeds the strength of the bone. And you can see on the left the picture of somebody falling. And so the rate, the magnitude, the direction of the fall can really impact what we fracture or if we fracture. The trauma from a fall, the trauma from bending, the trauma from compression to the spine if we bend and lift something heavy. And then the strength of the bone is determined by the bone density, but also by the quality of the bone. And there are ways now in research in particular to measure the strength of the bone. Also, the size and the shape and the structure of the bone can all help to determine the strength of the bone. Well, we know that 90% of hip fractures occur because of a fall. And unfortunately, hip fractures often lead to a loss of physical mobility and an inability to live independently. So more than 20% of individuals will die after a hip fracture, and half of them will not regain their level of independence. So it's really important to try to prevent falls that could lead to hip fractures. Furthermore, there's an increased risk of mortality, as I mentioned, after a hip fracture. So we really want to do whatever we can to prevent the falls and prevent the fractures. 1 in 4 spine fractures are also caused because of a fall. And many spine fractures actually go undiagnosed and untreated. And it's often thought that perhaps some acute back pain can be caused from an underlying vertebral fracture that does not get diagnosed. And half of these may be the result of spinal loading that occurs during everyday activity. And we know that spinal load increases in the spine with stooped posture, with a forward head posture, and also that's called hyperkyphosis. So what can you do to decrease your risk for fracture? Well, you can develop healthy habits. You can eat well. You can maintain a good, healthy body weight. Don't smoke. Limit your alcohol. And most importantly, exercise. And that's what I'm going to concentrate the rest of the talk about. We know there's some really good research that suggests that regular physical activity can reduce the fracture risk in older adults. And in this study, the Nurses Health Study, 60,000 postmenopausal women were followed for 12 years, and it was determined that there was lower risk of hip fracture just by regular walking, brisk walking, and even an increased standing during the day. It was determined in the Nurses Health Study that 4 hours a week of walking reduced your risk for hip fracture by about 41%. 8 hours a week of walking reduced it even more to about 55%. And fast walking reduced it 65% more than just walking slowly. And standing 10 hours or more a week reduced your risk more than 30%. So you can see that there's a variety of types of activity that you can do to reduce your risk for hip fracture. In this meta-analysis of 13 cohort studies, they combined studies, and there were over 300,000 older adults, and they determined that moderate to vigorous activity reduced the incidence of hip fracture by about 45%. And interestingly enough, they determined that there was an increased risk for hip fracture in the least active individuals as well as the most active individuals. So perhaps the most active individuals are putting themselves at high risk because they're doing high-risk activities, which I'll describe shortly. We also know that there's a positive association of bone measures and physical activity reported in midlife, in old age, and throughout life, and that lifelong physical activity continued after the age of 65 maintains better bone health. And that there's less bone loss and better balance among habitually active older men and women. And it was also determined that the rate of bone loss was about 0.6% less per year in active individuals. And what I showed you earlier on is there's this slow, gradual loss of bone mineral density with age. It's considered about a 1% loss each year with age. And being physically active can reduce that slow, gradual loss with aging. So some other evidence for the bone, for exercise effects on the bone, is that exercise affects the bone accrual, meaning the bone growth and bone development, and the strength of the bone, mostly when we're young. There is about an 8% increase annually in physically active children. And adults can achieve modest but important changes in bone mineral density. Exercise, as I mentioned, can prevent the loss at the hip by about 1%, so it can effectively either slow or stop the rate of bone loss with aging, and about 0.85%, so slightly less than 1% bone loss at the spine. Well, the effects of exercise on bone depends upon the type, and this is a group of studies that determine what is the best type of exercise for bone density. And we know that high impact exercise such as jumping is effective at the hip and but not at the spine. And high load resistance exercise means going to the gym and using weights, using machines, or putting on a backpack with weight in it and lying on your stomach and lifting your back to strengthen your back. So high load resistance is effective at the hip and at the spine. And that if you combine the high impact exercise like jumping or running and high load resistance exercise like weight training, it's effective in both the hip and the spine, and you actually get an added effect. An odd impact exercise such as moderate intensity activity like soccer and squash, meaning it's not consistent impact, but you're changing directions rapidly, they may be just as effective at high impact loading, and they may actually be safer than high impact loading. So what are some examples of weight bearing and impact exercises that may stimulate bone? Well, here's a list of things like volleyball, jumping, soccer, squash, racket sports, gymnastics, calisthenics, running, step aerobics, dancing, brisk walking, jogging, lunges, and push-ups through the upper extremity. So those are all weight-bearing activities that can stimulate bone. Also, exercises can be very helpful in preventing falls. We know that you can challenge your balance by standing on one leg, keeping your eyes open, closing your eyes, stepping, reaching, and turning in all directions to challenge your balance, and that those types of activities are effective in improving your balance. Also, strengthening your leg muscles can be very effective in improving your balance. And many approaches work. In other words, you can do a variety of different types of exercise, meaning balance exercise, strengthening exercise, and that can decrease your risk for falls by about 22%. Tai Chi is also very effective at reducing the risk for falls by almost 40%. An individually tailored exercise, meaning going to see a physical therapist and getting an examination to determine whether you have poor balance, whether you have weak lower extremity muscles, and then designing an exercise intervention that's tailored just to you, that is also quite effective with a decreased falls of about 34%. So let me talk a little bit about some of the effects of exercise and on the spine and spine fractures. This is an old study, but a really good study that examined the repeat spine fractures in 60 women who were enrolled in the study who initially had a spine fracture and osteoporosis. And they were given different types of exercise. And you can see that one group received extension exercises that are depicted on the top of the screen. Another group was given flexion exercises, which is depicted on the bottom of the screen. A third group was given combined flexion and extension exercises. And the last group was not instructed at all in exercise. And they followed these women over 6 years, and they examined the rate of additional fractures. And you can see on the graph that 16% of the women who performed extension exercises depicted on the top sustained additional fractures over that time period, compared to almost 90% of those who did the forward bending exercises. About half of those who did both combined exercises had additional fractures. And interestingly enough, those who didn't exercise at all, almost 70% of them had an additional spine fracture. So the take-home message in this is that avoiding bending exercises, flexion exercises, may have a protective effect. Doing some kind of exercise is better than not exercising at all, and that exercising by doing extension has the most benefit in protecting you from developing a vertebral fracture if you're at risk because you've had a prior fracture, or you're at risk because you have osteoporosis. This is a randomized controlled trial where they enrolled women and they randomized either to perform this one particular exercise every day or 5 days a week for 2 years, and those who were randomized to the control group did not exercise at all. And after 2 years of this exercise intervention, those individuals who had excessive curvature in the upper back and who were weak in their back muscles at the beginning, they had a reduced curvature in their back. In other words, lying on their stomach, as depicted in this picture, putting on a backpack, putting some weight in the backpack, and lifting the spine up into a neutral position to strengthen the back muscles. Those individuals who did that 5 days a week, 10 repetitions for 2 years, they reduced the curvature in their upper back. And interestingly enough, 10 years later, those individuals who did the exercises had fewer fractures in the spine compared to those who didn't exercise at all. Again, suggesting that spinal extension strengthening exercises may be effective in preventing fractures. So, what are some suggestions to extend and strengthen your spine? Well, you can see from these pictures strengthening the muscles in the back by pinching your shoulder blades together, The two pictures of the woman sitting in the chair, she's pushing back against a ball to strengthen her back extensor muscles. At the same time, she's stretching the muscles in her chest by putting her hands above her head to stretch the chest and strengthen the back. And then the picture on the bottom where she's lying on her stomach with weights in her hand, and she's lifting her body gently up off the floor in order to strengthen the muscles that will potentially reduce the curvature in her upper back as well as strengthen the muscles and potentially prevent future fractures. Also doing core exercise to stabilize the spine can be done, and we know that we need to strengthen the abdominal muscles and the back extensor muscles to keep the spine upright and erect. And also modifying how we bend and how we lift can also have a positive effect on reducing fracture risk. We know from some earlier work that compressive loads increase in the spine when we bend. And here's a picture of a woman hanging a picture. And that's increasing the load in her spine, in her lumbar spine. And the load that develops in the lumbar spine from an activity like that is enough to fracture an osteoporotic vertebrae. And we know that bone will fail sooner when the bone mineral density is lower. So how do we make sense of that? What do we do in order to protect ourselves, particularly if we have low bone mineral density and are at risk for a vertebral fracture? Well, bending and lifting in neutral can reduce our fracture risk. And here's some practical application. We can keep our spine in neutral when we bend. And notice in this picture that she's bending at her hips and her knees while she's keeping her back straight. And here's another picture of that, bending and lifting with the spine in neutral. And the top picture, that's a picture of me, and I'm bending with a rounded back, and that can increase my risk for a spinal fracture if I've got osteoporosis or a history of spine fracture or an excessive curve in the upper back. And that should be avoided. And instead, we should be hip hinging during activities of daily living and movements as depicted in the bottom picture, where my spine is in neutral, my bending at my hips and my knees. And in order to do this well, you need to increase the mobility in your upper back and increase the strength in your spinal muscles so that you can do this easily and throughout the day. So what are the take-home messages here? Well, good posture and body mechanics comes first. And here's some pictures of good posture and standing, where the head is lined up over the shoulders and the hips and the feet. In the middle picture, she's sitting in good neutral spine, again with her head over her shoulders and over her hips. And notice in the last picture how she's keeping her spine straight. She's bending at her hips and her knees. She's scooting to the edge of the chair, and then she's standing up using her legs to help her get out of the chair. Also, choosing posture, best posture and movement during activities of daily living. So remember to keep the spine in neutral when you do activities like pick up your dog, garden, load the washing machine, load the dishwasher, putting on your shoes in the morning, getting groceries out of the car. It's really important and helpful to keep the spine straight and use your legs to do the lifting to take the stress and strain off of your spine. Also, to choose best posture and movement during daily exercise. And on the left, I have some pictures of exercises that are very helpful to increase mobility in the spine, to strengthen the spine, And on the right, I have several pictures of things to avoid. So avoid bending forward to touch the toes. Avoid doing crunches where you compress the fronts of the vertebrae. And avoid sitting and touching your toes, because all of these increase the compressive force in the vertebrae and increases the risk of spinal fractures. So how can a healthy lifestyle reduce fractures? Well, it begins in when we're young, and exercise when we're young can maximize the peak bone mass that develops during those first 30 years that I mentioned early on. And then exercise can help to maintain bone mass over life. It can reduce the age-related bone loss that occurs with aging, and even small changes can be beneficial. Exercise can help to preserve muscle strength. It can help to improve postural alignment. It can reduce the chance of a fall. And for those who do fracture, exercise can help recovery after a fall. So for those adults who are healthy and over the age of 50, we can reduce our age-related bone loss and fracture risk with good nutrition, getting enough vitamin D, getting enough calcium, supplementing if you're not getting enough through your diet, regular weight-bearing and resistance exercise, staying fit and active with moderate, vigorous, or a combination of aerobic exercise most days, and then targeted strengthening exercises for the spine and for the hip. The American College of Sports Medicine suggests that adults over the age of 50 should engage in at least 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise each week. So that's a little more than 20 minutes a day. It can be broken up. It doesn't have to be done all at once. So taking a 10-minute walk in the morning and a 10-minute walk in the afternoon is actually is a good way to get those minutes in. Core stabilization, so strengthening our abdominal muscles and our back extensor muscles. Doing balance exercises 2 to 3 times a week. Muscle strengthening 2 to 3 times a week. And flexibility as well, incorporated into that 150 minutes of exercise each week. For those individuals who have a high risk of fracture, so those people who do have osteoporosis, a history of fracture, or frequent falls, should also stay active and gradually progress their activity. These individuals should still do weight-bearing, strengthening, balance, postural alignment training, but should avoid high-impact and high-load exercises through the spine. In other words, these individuals should avoid jumping activities and heavy lifting activities. And it's helpful to consult your primary care provider and a physical therapist before starting an exercise program, because they can give you guidance and help you develop a safe and effective exercise program. Also, if you have osteoporosis, a history of fractures, or frequent falls, try to maintain good posture throughout the day during all your activities. Avoid flexion or avoid bending the spine. Stand tall to prevent falls. So in summary, I'm going to read a quote by Pekka Kannas, who is an osteoporosis researcher in Finland. And he said that the evidence strongly suggests that regular physical activity, especially if started in childhood and adolescence, is the only cheap, safe, readily available, and largely acceptable way of both improving bone strength and reducing the propensity to fall. It should therefore become an essential part of strategies aimed at controlling the alarming increase in osteoporotic fractures. Moreover, of all the methods of fracture prevention, regular physical activity is the only one that provides considerable other health-related benefits. For all of these reasons, we must get both younger and older people moving. And I'd like to direct your attention to some resources that may help you get moving and stay physically active. The American Physical Therapy Association website has some PowerPoints on exercise, and the Geriatrics Store has some DVDs for exercise to improve posture. The American Bone Health and Foundation for Osteoporosis Research has all kinds of great resources, and particularly I'd like to call your attention to their PDF that demonstrates ways to protect your spine, do's and don'ts during the course of the day. The National Osteoporosis Foundation has a lot of good information about exercise, as does the Surgeon General's report, the National Institute of Health, and the World Health Organization. The fracture assessment tool is available for you to go online and actually assess your fracture risk. So happy exercising, stay fit, stay active. Thanks for your attention.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.